The national news hasn't lacked for reports the last few months about violent crime. Mass shootings, in particular, get our attention and tear at our hearts. But we sometimes miss that violence happens out of the headlines, every day, and close to home. There were 108 homicides last year in Kansas City, Missouri alone, and more than half the victims and the suspects were under the age of 35. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we take a look at something local police and prosecutors and academics and community groups are all coming together to do about it. NOVA is a violent crime prevention program that's targeting those most likely to hurt, kill, or be victims themselves. It's worked in other cities. Can it work here? We'll also talk to one young man who had a choice about which way his life would go, and he chose to walk away from crime. We'll find out why. That's ahead on Central Standard after the news. It is a day and age where violence, whether it be school shootings or homicides on city streets, can sometimes feel like it has the upper hand. But here in Kansas City, a project is underway to change that perception and the reality. Good morning, I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard. The Kansas City No Violence Alliance, or NOVA, is an effort started last year in Kansas City, Missouri, to address violent crime. Maybe the program's hitting its stride. Last month, police made a sweep of literally hundreds of high-risk individuals, making some arrests, sending others, or at least hoping to send them, down a different path away from violent crime. We'll talk about that effort today, but we want to begin with someone who found that path a few years ago. His name is Michael Anderson, and he's joining us by phone this morning. Michael, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you. So you are talking to us. You're a 27-year-old man. But before you tell us about the person that you are today, I want you to take us back 8 or 10 years to someone maybe that it feels like you used to be growing up in Kansas City. Who were you a decade ago?
Well, I would say I was lost. That's what I would. That's the word, the one word that I would use for who I was. Lost man, no guidance, and just thought, you know, stealing and fast money was the way of life, you know.
You grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, right?
Yes.
Where in town were you?
I grew up midtown, 55th in Michigan, 56th in Woodland, over there in that area.
Sure. And what, you said you felt like you were lost. What happened? What path was your life taking at that point?
Well, at this point, a decade ago, I was living South Kansas City with my grandmother. And at this time, my brother had just went to a penitentiary, my older brother. The man of the house at the time. Then my mother had moved to Milwaukee trying to search for, you know, a better place for us to stay out of the city. So when I say lost, I mean just young, a young man just having to live for myself, you know, with no one there, you know, having to take on the man role and necessarily not knowing how to do that because, you know, here it is, my older brother just went to the penitentiary, and my mother had just moved out of town.
You know, I think a lot of our listeners might not feel like they know even the part of town where you were living or the life you were living. How typical do you feel like your story was for young men 15 to 20 years old at that point?
Well, if you actually, I think my story was my story's typical, but I think I got off easy compared to a lot of other guys out here. Mm. And when I say easy, I mean I never really had to serve, like, you know, hard time or, you know, never really had to even kill anybody. Like, you know, and it's guys out here who are doing these things every day, and that's tough, you know. So, I mean, I witnessed a lot of things, but I feel like it made me strong who I am today. So I look back and I say, man, I got off pretty easy compared to the typical, you know, person.
So you did find yourself getting involved in crime. What kind of crime were you involved in, Michael?
Most of the crime I was involved in was robbing, but not robbing like convenience stores or stuff bars, you know, stuff like that, but robbing my fellow criminal, you know, that's what we were doing. We were robbing each other.
Were you just sort of doing that on your own? Were you stealing for yourself? Were you part of a group that was involved in this?
Yeah, well, I used to, again, I was rapping. I did street gangster rap, and the group that I had was called the Turf Bros, and it was just like three or four of us, and basically we were, you know, under the influence of survival of the fittest, because we didn't have, you know, no one taking care of us, so we felt like, yeah, we had to, you know, we had to eat.
Mike, do you feel like Kansas City has a gang violence problem? Would you call this gang violence, I guess?
I would. When I think of gang violence, man, I think of 1985 to 95, Crips and Bloods, you know. And today, I just think, I wouldn't say it's gang violence. I think a lot of us are just lost. Like, that's the best explanation I can have. I mean, we can say all kind of stuff, but we can put a name to it, but I just think it's a group of people who just lost, man. And, like, there's no love in the city, if you know, we can say it like that.
And how does it get to that place, in your opinion, Mike? Like, what is the sort of the root cause? Because obviously you weren't the only one in the situation. People were worse off than you were. How did it get to that point? What's the number one thing that causes that?
If I could say that in one word, I would say exposure. Just being exposed to it. And I was thinking, it doesn't necessarily have to be gang violence, you know, like, because violence is everywhere. Like, correct? Like, would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Like, violence is everywhere. It's in the suburbs, it's in the urban, it's in the world. But those who are affected by it are the people who are exposed to it. Like something could have happened. I'm talking about the urban community. A lot of us grow up in crack houses. You know, we grow up in, houses where, you know, the mothers let anything go on, and 9 times out of 10, violence is happening. Drug selling is going on. And as kids, because that's where it all starts, as kids, you see this stuff, and, you know, that's just how you start to live, you know. That's just, it becomes a part of life. And some people are not even consciously aware of the violence that they are committing, because it's normal to them.
So
that's why I say we lost.
So, Mike, you know that we're talking today about an effort that's being made now to reduce crime and violent crime in Kansas City. We'll be hearing from county prosecutor and the police department. But I wonder if you could just tell a little of how you came out of that life. You're in a very different place today, right?
Yeah, I'm in a very different place today. I'm not going to say, because the world would say, you know, you found religion, I wouldn't say I found religion. A lot of things had a play on me changing, which kids, for one, like, even when I had my kids, I still was trying to live that life as far as not necessarily hurting folks, but, you know, just staying out all hours of the night, just looking for trouble. But one day I was doing my music on stage somewhere, and I felt like, you know, the Lord spoke to me, telling me that all the people who are there, nodding their head to my music, I'm basically leading them to a bad place. And that made me stop doing almost everything wrong that I was doing. That made me stop that night.
So,
and it was so sad that I was in tears, like the things I was saying, like, it was bigger than me performing. It's the words that I was saying that people were, you know, following.
So what happened after? What are you doing now?
So after that, man, I wasn't going to do anything. I was just going to live a square life, and that's what, you know, the streets call you when you're just trying to live right. they call you a square. So I was just like, you know, Lord, let me live a square life. I don't want to do music, nothing. Until one day I wrote, I actually wrote a gospel song, and I liked it. And after reading, you know, my Bible and going to church, I started becoming more confident in the word. And now I'm doing music, and I'm doing videos and shows all over Kansas City. And I'm not only incorporating, you know, Christ in my music, but I'm trying to show these young men that there's a different way to live, you know, to get what you want.
The genre of gospel rap is not one that I've listened to a lot of, Michael. But you're bringing it to life, huh?
Yeah, man. Fox 4 News, they played it on their, they interviewed me and they played it on the news one day. And I mean, it's just I'm not getting paid, you know. I'm not the richest man, but in a sense, I am rich, you know, because I don't have to look over my shoulder when I walk out my house. I'm not paranoid. I'm just living a good, you know, a good life, you know. And that's, I mean, I'm thankful for it, you know.
Well, I'm thankful for it, too, Michael. I really commend you for the choices you've made and for the work you're doing now. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
No problem, man. No problem at all. And like I said, the thing with me is I want it to change. And a lot of us have to want to, you know, we have to want to change, you know. And I knew that I was living was bad. And I accepted, you know, everything that happened. And I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to throw that out.
I appreciate it very much. That's Michael Anderson. He grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, lives now in Independence, and has found a way out of a life that that he says was a dangerous one and is now in a different place. Thanks again, Mike, for being with us.
Thank you, man.
Well, joining us now to talk about one effort to reach out to young men like Michael, young men and women in Kansas City, and to address the problem in a new way, are Jean Peters-Baker. She's the Jackson County Prosecutor. Jean, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Sergeant Gary L. Cooley of the Kansas City Police Department, welcome to you.
Thank you, Brian.
He's heading up a new squad that is committed to this program. And Dr. Ken Novak, who's Associate Professor in the Criminal Justice and Criminology Department here at UMKC. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Novak, let me start with you. We know that the crime in Kansas City is disproportional to our size. We have, according to the FBI's statistics, we have more violent crime than many other cities that are actually smaller than Kansas City. What's the tell us, flesh out those statistics. What is the level of violent crime here, and why is it a problem?
Well, you're right. Kansas City does have historically had a higher violent crime rate than many similar sized cities and even some bigger cities. But like other urban environments, crime tends to be geographically concentrated, particularly within the urban core, as Michael was talking about earlier, and also concentrated amongst individuals. Not all people are committing crime. Small numbers of people are committing a disproportionate amount of crime. And so to that end, there's a lot of similarities to Kansas City and other locations. But it seems like the Prospect Corridor, the urban corridor in particular, has much more crime that is driving a lot of the citywide statistics.
But you say that a lot of the crime is committed by a very small portion of the population.
Yeah, and that's pretty typical in Kansas City. That's been demonstrated in the research literature for 60, 70 years.
We heard Michael talk about a group he was involved in, which you might call a gang, but we're not talking here about like the Los Angeles Bloods and Crips, that sort of gang violence. Is gang violence a reality in Kansas City?
Well, gang violence, or probably more broadly speaking, violence committed by groups of people. It's not necessarily, like Michael was talking about, not necessarily Bloods, Crips, Latin Kings, but humans are social beings, and we operate in social networks, and we're influenced a lot by what our peers feel, what they think, and very often crime is a function of being part of a network. Also, being pro-social is part of being a network. People who mean a lot to me, mean a lot to other people, you're more likely to conform your actions to what their expectations are.
That's Ken Novak. He's a professor here at UMKC. This is Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison, and we're talking today about a new program, NOVA, the No Violence Alliance, that is designed to reduce violent crime in Kansas City. Gene Peters-Baker, Jackson County prosecutor, tell us about NOVA. I think we all assume that programs to reduce violence are just about, you know, sending police officers to schools to do educational work. This is something different, right?
This is quite different. It's different in its scope. It's different in the collaboration that we have around our table. And it's really nothing like we've ever seen in Kansas City before. Now, the first thing I'd caution people against is that the statistics of where we are in Kansas City, I think Dr. Novak talked about a little bit of a 60-year history for some of these statistics of crime. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of this overnight. NOVA is not going to be that panacea that fixes this by summertime. We're in this for the long haul. All of these organizations are working together, and we are committed in every possible way through our own resources, our own funding, our personnel. And it's not going to be the project of 2013. We are here together. So what's different is that we are housed together. In my office, in the prosecutor's office, we have law enforcement, probation and parole will be joining us very soon, prosecutors, a social service worker. And so that is what's different. We are collaborating in a new way, in a very real way.
Sergeant Gary Cooley of the Kansas City Police Department, you're one of those who has moved over to the prosecutor's office to work on this program. We are not the first city to do this, right? You've taken some inspiration and learned some lessons from other cities, right?
That's very correct. A lot of cities, Cincinnati, Boston, Chicago, have done models like this. And we've looked extensively at their programs, their models. But the thing, like Gene said, that we're doing differently, we're taking those models and we're looking at it through Kansas City eyes, you know, what's going to work here in Kansas City.
Right. So maybe some folks have heard about the Boston miracle, so-called, where there was this dramatic drop in crime in Boston after a program, something like this, got underway. Ken, can you tell us about the Boston miracle? What happened in Boston?
Well, what happened in Boston was they implemented a focused deterrence type of approach. And much like Kansas City, there were a lot of different agencies, public and private, who came to the table to try to address their particular problem was youth gang violence. And they saw dramatic decreases in crime. But, you know, the one thing about the Boston miracle that just to keep in mind, there may not have been anything miraculous about it. There was a lot of hard work and a lot of strategic planning and a lot of effort by a lot of different people at the table. So, you know, sometimes even calling it the miracle might be a little bit misleading.
Gene Peters-Baker, you have obviously looked at these other programs as well. What makes this a uniquely Kansas City approach?
You know, Kansas City, I guess the way I look at Kansas City and beyond the borders of Kansas City is that crime is a disease in this community. And it doesn't just impact the urban core of Kansas City. Though there, it's true, there is a disproportionate impact on those individuals who live in the urban core because of crime. But we're all impacted by crime. So if you live in Prairie Village, if you live in Lee Summit or Blue Springs or north of the river, your community is also impacted by this disease of crime. And so it is incumbent upon all of us, everybody around this table and those that are working hard back at the office, to address this as a disease and how can we make it different. So Kansas City has some unique factors, and those are issues that we're trying to address for Kansas City. You know, maybe what happened in Boston won't apply just as it did in Cincinnati or Indianapolis. Other cities have had great success in this kind of effort. But for Kansas City, we're looking at our boundaries, we're looking at our borders, and we're looking at the type of crime that we have here to address.
Gary Cooley, let's talk about some of the specifics. What kinds of crime are we talking about when we say violent crime that we're trying to reduce?
We're specifically targeting, Brian, the reduction of homicides and aggravated assaults specifically. That's our target.
And what are the numbers like? Are there numerical goals for the kinds of reduction you're seeking?
I don't think numerical. If you look over the last 30 to 40 years, I mean, we've had up to 100, if not 100 homicides plus per year. And that's just staggering for us, you know, and it's something that we really have got to, you know, like Gene said, you know, we've become accustomed to, that's just the way of life. That's just the way it is. We've become where we've accepted that.
Right. 108 homicides in 2012. That's not a big deal.
To some, that's where we've gotten to. And it's sad. You know, and that's what I think we're trying to institute a path of change and realizing that those numbers have got to come down. Those are lives, individual lives. You know, we've talked about, you know, like Gene said, 2013, we're working hard for a plan for 2013. But this is really a long term process that we're trying to institute. And, you know, if we can reduce and save one life, you know, ideally 20-30% reduction would be enormous for us.
Mm-hmm. So Gene, the language that Ken used a moment ago talking about Boston is focused deterrence.
Absolutely.
What does that mean?
That means the way that we have prosecuted and our law enforcement have worked in the past, to use this analogy, is we've done it with a shotgun approach. So we are working any case that comes through the door. And some of the cases that maybe we should drill down and focus on, those few individuals that are doing the majority of crime, kind of get lost in the volume that comes through the door in Jackson County.
So this, by focusing on one of those 10 cases, that one might be the one that will lead to 20 more cases down the road.
You bet. This is we're trying to get the right people with the right information and then also dispense the right medicine if this is a disease, right? Is the medicine arrest and prosecution? Is it jail time? That is definitely going to be the case for some. But for others, and probably the much larger group, that's not the proper medicine to get the best result for Kansas City. It would be a social services model that we can deliver social services like we do along the lines of drug court to see to it that people have resources that they need so that they can turn their own lives around like Michael did.
When we come back for the second half of our show in a little bit, we'll talk more about some of the social services angles of this. Ken, I'm wondering if you could talk about how it is that cities that operate programs like this figure out who are those cases, on which cases should you focus to prevent more crime in the long run?
Well, one of the things, Brian, that's going on in Kansas City and what's been done elsewhere is to really drill into a lot of the data that the police department, the prosecutor's office, and other entities already collect to see how individuals are socially connected, who hangs out with who, who's been stopped with other people, to try to see how the spider web of the social network looks.
Sounds a little like Facebook, checking out people's Facebook friends.
It's in some cities they have looked at Facebook or the, you know, back in the day, the MySpace types of pages to see who are influential to each other. The idea here of focused deterrence is that it's very preventative. It's very proactive rather than, you know, historically the criminal justice system has been reactive. After a crime has occurred, people are arrested, prosecuted, and done so very well. But that type of medicine, as Gene was saying, may not be appropriate for everyone. It certainly wasn't for Michael. And, you know, Michael even mentioned in his description that, you know, the people who were influential to him were the guys he was hanging out with in his rap group. Those are, if you can identify those networks of individuals who are most crime prone, but frankly also most prone to be a victim. If you could get them on a different path, be it through deterrence of the law or access to social services or the religious community, that's the type of focused message that that is implemented.
Gene, I guess I think some people are going to hear that description and they're going to worry a little bit. They're going to hear that it's going to sound like guilt by association. It's going to sound like even profiling in one form or another. How does it not end up being that?
In a way, it is. We are gathering information that we have never used before. And if you think about the information and how we're gathering it, we're drawing it down, it is how we can do a better job dispensing our very limited resources. So for some, it is that social services model, you know, like our drug court or our veterans court, where we try and give people the tools that they need to live their lives successfully on the street. So it's not just an effort where we're going after just the bad guys. We are going after the bad guys. But it's very important to note, Brian, that a very small number of people are doing a disproportionate amount of the crime. Those are the folks. If you're impacting violence on this city, we are going to go after you. You bet we are, and in a new way.
Well, and let me talk about that with you, Sergeant Cooley. Last month, there was a clean sweep, it was called, a police activity that brought really hundreds of people in. Tell us what happened last month in that episode that got a lot of press coverage.
Brian, you talked earlier about what other cities have done, other models. And in those other models, there's an initial piece to that there's a demonstration that we have to show the community what the law enforcement community can do if one of those networks engages in violent crime. So that's what that was. You know, our initial network that was identified, there was 380 in that network. And of those, there was well over 200 warrants within that network, and there was 95 to 100 federal agents and police officers that went out during that clean sweep to arrest folks on warrants. And, you know, the other important piece, though, is the balance that I like to see or make sure is stated. Those officers were also out positive messaging and making sure the community understood what we were doing out there and the identification of that network.
Now, this was a one-time event, or will there be more of these clean sweeps as part of this program?
We hope it's a one-time event. We really do. I think the idea is when we get to a point of doing call-ins in the future where these future networks are identified, we'll do a call-in, and we're going to use that demonstration, that clean sweep, to show them if you engage in violent crime, this is what can happen. But our hope and our desire is we show them the other option, the social services, the other path that they can choose, and our hope is that they take that path.
Well, let's take a break where we can explore after the break some of that other path, some of the opportunities that social services might provide for those who don't go the way of being arrested, those who might choose a different path than violent crime. I want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation, too. How has your life been affected by violent crime in the metro area, and what do you think can be done about it? Wonder what hopes you have for NOVA, for a program that's designed to reduce violent crime in the area. Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about the No Violence Alliance, NOVA, a new program in Kansas City, Missouri, designed to reduce violent crime in the metro area. My guests are Gene Peters-Baker, the prosecutor of Jackson County, Sergeant Gary Cooley of the Kansas City Police, and Dr. Ken Novak from the UMKC Criminal Justice Department. And also joining us now is Laura McDonald. She's executive director of More Squared, which is one of the organizations involved in this project. Laura, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
I think you can do a better job than I can of telling us, what is More Squared?
More Squared is the Metro Organization for Racial and Economic Equity. And what we do is we organize, we are community organizers that primarily work on policy-related issues through the faith-based community.
And primarily on policy-related issues, but in this program, NOVA, you're doing something different, right?
Absolutely. What we're doing with NOVA is really putting a call out to all people of faith to get involved in being a part of the solution to violent crime in Kansas City.
Who supports you? Where do you get the funding and the mandate to be involved in this work?
The mandate for me comes from a higher power, actually, and I'm absolutely called to do this work. What affects one person in our city, as Gene was saying earlier, affects all people in our city. And who supports our work? A number of people do. For this particular project, we're funded by the Local Initiative Support Corporation, LISC, and we also have a number of congregations who are members, and they pay membership dues to be a part of this important work.
So, Laura, before I ask you kind of the details of what is happening in these programs when folks who are being redirected from the prosecutor's office and the police department to receive these services. Let me ask Eugene Peters Baker, the prosecutor of Jackson County, how do you decide who are the candidates for social services and for other kinds of support rather than targets for arrest?
We don't decide that. That is a message that is delivered, and it is decided by the Michaels of the world. The Michaels of the world can choose to receive what we are offering them, or they can continue on a path of violence. And if they make that choice to stay on a path of violence, we will get to know them in a whole nother way.
Gary Cooley of the police department, have you seen in a very tangible way the impact of folks getting involved in programs like the ones that Laura is talking about before they get involved in criminal activity?
I have. You know, I've had the luxury over the last year to – a lot of the work I've done is with probation and parole and enhancing that relationship there. But having – sitting in on what they their report days for individuals who are on supervision, for example – the thing that's been eye-opening for me is every one of those individuals has a story of how they got, you know, like Michael, how they got there. And a lot of us like to sit back and think that, you know, they made that decision or, you know, that's their fault. Or, you know, you can look at it a little bit differently as well. You know, sometimes if I were a child and grew up in that environment, where would I be? You know, what would my situation be? But, you know, I've seen the impact and you know, those folks taking advantage of the resources that are available. And sadly, I've seen them take, you know, make that other choice, you know, where I have to stay involved from the police perspective.
I want to invite our listeners, if you have questions for our guests or if you have your own ideas about how to prevent violent crime in Kansas City, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Laura, give us some of the details. What happens what ways do you have to reach out to particular individuals in Kansas City?
So one of the things I want to clarify is we are not doing the direct service social service arm of this work. What we are doing is organizing. And so actually the social services will be provided through Jackson County Prosecutor's Office. A friend of mine, Teresa Britt Lewis, will be heading up that program. And so what we do is more around the messaging, pulling together the faith community, pulling the faith community out of the walls and the confines of their congregations and saying, you know what, this makes a difference to us. If we care about racial and economic equity and we're not paying attention to violent crime, we're not going to fulfill our missions.
So what does that look like for them? What are they doing to get involved?
Absolutely. So what we will be doing is we'll actually have a role at the call-ins where we participate with inviting individuals to make a change in their lives, to use those. What was important to me about what Michael said earlier was there is a certain amount of exposure that he had to violence. And it may have been media, but it was in his household. It was in his neighborhood. We need to be exposing those people to opportunities. We create opportunities, and we need to expose people to those types of things that we're doing. So it's changing the exposure.
So you've mentioned, and others have mentioned, these call-ins. What is a call-in, and what happens at a call-in?
Well, at a call-in, it's exactly the message that Gene's been giving. It's giving people an opportunity to do the right thing and take a different path. Or, as the mayor said at the press conference, time to get your toothbrush. You're going to be prosecuted and you're going to jail.
So are these are meetings in church basements or community centers? What is it? How many people come? Who gets the invite?
I think I can perhaps answered that. The call-ins are different for different groups. So there will be no one standard format, one standard place for a call-in. But there will be invitations that will be made of people
strong
that we ask
suggestions,
to come.
Perhaps.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the goal of the call-in, however, is still deterrence. It is deterrence. It is not to deliver that message of that we want you to get your toothbrush and get ready. We're simply saying we have another path for you. As Michael said, he was lost. He was lost. And so we're looking for those individuals who are lost and need help being guided into a different path.
Our guests are referring to Michael Anderson. If you've joined us late, we spoke with him at the top of the hour, a young man who came out of a life of crime and has turned his life around, didn't have the benefit of this kind of program, but not everyone has that sort of conversion experience, that see-the-light sort of moment that he described. I guess I'm wondering, who does the talking at these call-in meetings? Who has the credibility to address a group of potential criminals or potential people who will turn their life around?
You know, it's a combination of individuals. And so we do hope and expect to have faith-based leaders at that table. Our Captain McHale, who is heading up this effort of KC Nova as the project manager, will be present as well. Victims of crimes whose lives have been impacted, forever. We expect those individuals to have a voice at that forum. So it's going to vary, as I said. There's no cookie-cutter approach to this, and we're going to address each individual community based on their individual needs.
Laura, in your experience, why does someone come to a call-in? Why don't they come?
Well, we have not yet done a call-in, but I have worked with the offender population since about 1994. And what my experience is there's an absolute mandate that motivates some people. Some people are motivated out of curiosity. Sometimes people don't show up because they really have this hopelessness, this despair. To show up, meaning show up to change their lives. My career's been as a social worker. And so when people don't show up, it's fear, it's hopelessness, it's despair quite often.
Sergeant Cooley, are people afraid they'll be arrested?
I was sitting here thinking as she was responding that that's probably a natural fear. And we want to get that out early, that these are not stings. They are a call-in to educate them. And really what I want the community to understand, it's a community call-in. The folks that are going to be doing and orchestrating these call-ins is that individual person's community. Their neighborhood association leader might be there. Their pastor might be there. We want them to understand there's some genuine concern and redirection and wanting them to take that opportunity.
Ken, these call-ins, have they been part of the program in other cities?
Yeah, actually, the call-ins have been central to the focused deterrence message in other cities. And the idea here behind focused deterrence is you can't shape someone's behavior through deterrence if they're not familiar with the consequences. And you can't expect people to seek out social services if they're not aware of where to go for those things. And at the end of the day, that's exactly what a call-in is.
So is it a lecture? I mean, is it a sit down and listen to the facts sort of event?
It's not participative. It's not a discussion. It's a little lecture-like, but it's more of a being able to convey information to everybody there in a very clear manner, and further hoping that they take that message back out to the streets to them. The idea here of the social network, again, is that these call-ins may only have 20, 25 people at a time, but they influence that message to hundreds of other people. That's the idea.
You can call us with your questions for our guests at 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. That's what Beth did. She wrote to us, can you go into various zip codes and, like DUI checkpoints, have random gun checks? She says New York has done this, must have been legal privacy issues already addressed. She just finds it hard to believe, Beth says, that to the degree people have guns, that the law can't fight them like an Ebola virus, like a public health department might. What do you think of that from the prosecutor's office, Jean?
There are some problems with that approach. Central to my work is the Constitution. And, we will never step outside the confines of the Constitution to do our job. The Constitution, however, does not prevent me from delivering the message of violence will no longer be tolerated in this community. And so if you commit violence, especially particularly gun violence, I agree with Julie, gun violence is a real problem here. It's going to be met with a new fervor that you haven't seen before.
You know, I think Beth's question really sort of raises the reality that there are sort of two different ways to think about reducing crime. One is to go after offense. The other is to prevent it before it happens. Yeah. This represents a real clear step toward prevention that seems very new. Am I right about that in our context here in Kansas City?
You absolutely are. And I think how I would respond to that is we've been doing the same thing for those 30 to 40 years I've been talking about. And I think we're realizing that filling our prisons that are already full just isn't the right answer anymore. We have to find a different path.
If I could add there, Brian, the two players that are not at this table today but have been at the beginning of this effort and in a bold way is Chief Forte and Mayor James. And without the two of them, without their full commitment to take on a mission shift, to look at crime in a new way, we would not be here. So they are part of this effort in a real boots-on-the-ground kind of way.
You know, one of the things that's different about this is you're also involving faith-based communities. Obviously, that's the world that you come from, Laura. I wonder, you know, Gene mentioned the Constitution. Maybe some people have concerns about church and state being mixed here. Is that a concern that you all have addressed? How is it that a faith-based organization can do, on some level, this work of the county, of the government?
We don't see this as work of the government. We absolutely see this as work of the people, for the people, and by the people of this community. Only the government alone will never solve a problem of violent crime. People, in fact, are the people who elect people. People are the people who vote, who support government with taxes. So we should be the same people at the table when these things are happening and creating a response and change in our community for the better.
Have you had any pushback? Has anyone in the community sort of said this is any of your supportive congregations, Laura, or anyone else in the community said, wait a minute, That's not what I want to be about. I want to be about going after criminals and putting them in jail, and this isn't what I want to be doing.
Well, within our organization, absolutely not. I was curious about how this idea would be received when we were approached to be a part of NOVA, because our focus has been almost entirely on policy work. So that was more my initial concern. But you know what? We received a resounding response from all the clergy and all the faith leaders and all of our board members involved who said, you know what, we have to pay attention to this problem. And it's not enough to go out and pray and do candlelight vigils in our streets after people are murdered. We need to do something beforehand to make a difference in this community.
Any pushback in the prosecutor's office or the police department?
I think what Chief Forte is doing, what I'm doing in my organization, is a mission shift. So, yes, we've had some pushback. I think that's fair to say. But the proof will be in the results.
You know, I'm intrigued that, well, frankly, that you're at the table with us, Ken, as an academic. This seems like sort of boots on the ground stuff. Tell me about the presence of you as a scholar of criminal justice in this sort of day-to-day operation.
Well, and my and UMKC's presence, along with one of my colleagues, Andrew Fox, who's also on faculty with me in the department, what our role is at the end of the day is to help policymakers make informed decisions about best practices and provide them with assistance in analyzing their own information and strategically deciding so that they have the information available to make good, sound, strategic decisions that are most effective and efficient.
I see. And so what do you do with are you gaining research data from this process as it goes on? Is there a growing body of literature about this that you are now contributing to by Kansas City being involved?
Well, that's the long-term goal as well. I mean, first and foremost is public safety in Kansas City, but secondarily is informing the national conversation about focused deterrence. This type of model has been implemented in at least 10 other cities very strategically and evaluated very thoroughly, and we want to hopefully be able to contribute to that conversation as the best practices of today may inform the best practices of tomorrow.
Sergeant Cooley, does the police department take note of who attends the call-ins and who doesn't?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we'll be taking note. Just, you know, we've already discussed that. If somebody doesn't attend, we're going to go out and make sure that message is delivered to not just them, but their family. we want the entire family to understand and know what this is about and progress from there.
And is there another step of the process beyond these call-ins and beyond the follow-up? What else makes up focused deterrence? Or is that it?
I think one of the most important part of this process is what we are saying, the message we are delivering, that we are following through on that message. So when I say violence will not be tolerated, that we're going to go after you in a new way if you're impacting violence on my community, then I need to follow through and meet that individual in the courtroom.
816-235-2888 is the number to call if you have questions or comments about NOVA, the No Violence Alliance, the new program here in Kansas City. Nick in Lenexa, Kansas is with us. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. I just wanted to add a couple notes here. It's not necessarily on NOVA in particular, but I am a renter down in Kansas City, and I haven't been down there too long, but I'm renting houses down there. And I have found that every time I'm out there working, just about every, not only kids, but all the guys and all the people that walk by, they're always asking, hey, is there anything we can do? Is there any way we can make a couple bucks here? Can we help you out? I mean, to me, it just comes straight back to opportunity. And I guess my question would be, if there's a way to get the faith-based organizations to find the job creators and set up some kind of production or factory or some kind of opportunity job-wise down there, and maybe even for the younger kids, so that, you know, they're walking the streets now at 14 and 15. In a couple years, it won't be too long before they're, you know, at risk, let's say, to get involved with what they shouldn't get involved with. So
great.
I think the faith base should get the job creators and create some opportunity down there for these kids, and we can avoid maybe a good share of this.
Nick, thanks for your call. Let's talk to Laura McDonald, who is with one of those faith-based organizations. Laura, is Nick right?
I love that comment from Nick. As a seasoned social worker in this community, I see and hear that all the time. Before I came to More Squared, I was actually working for the Kansas City Crime Commission, organizing around prisoner reentry and doing offender programs. And the thing that was most upsetting to me ongoing was that people would come and say, there's nothing out here for us. And the fact is, there are numerous programs teaching job skills. Two of the early things that More Squared did is passed a workforce ordinance in Kansas City, Missouri, whereby people of color and women get jobs, construction-related jobs on city projects. We worked on the Kitbon Bridge and leveraged jobs for lots of folks. But what we have found is the folks in the community, I've seen throughout my career, the folks in the community who most need those opportunities are least likely to know about them. And that's where we need to flip the script and do something different. Those who most need the opportunities are the ones that need to get them.
Let's talk to Rick out in Lawrence. Rick, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Basically, I am listening to your moderators. Your individual that was on first said that he had lost hope and things like that. And I wonder on your social service model side, whether, you know, you give, you know, a good idea might be to give these individuals classes on, you know, like Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, or, you know, the book, What Color Is My Parachute, you know, to give them hope and more education, you know, on how to, you know, set weekly goals and monthly goals and, you know, what might be best for them to do and how they can achieve those particular goals. You know, does NOVA do anything like that, or, you know, have any classes like that for the individuals?
Thanks for the question, Rick. Gene, the social services that come out of the prosecutor's office, is this the kind of help that that people get?
It is, actually. We offer job readiness kind of programs because sometimes just giving a job is not the answer. You got to get people job ready first so they know how to hold that job, how to be successful at that job, how to get the job. But we also have life skills classes that we give now to our drug court recipients, and it's highly successful.
Great. Let's talk to Alan, who's in Independence. Alan, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. My question may be a little bit redundant. I called in, and then a gentleman just before me said something similar, but I've worked with juvenile felons for many years and with drug abusers, and it seems today there is just too little opportunity for these people to find gainful employment. I know this, you know, we've beaten this drum already, but even with training and so forth, if you have an offender, an ex-offender, who, with a record, of course, it's very, very difficult. They're on the bottom of the food chain when it comes to gainful employment. And it's, you know, with unemployment as high as it is right now.
Sure. It's a real problem. We appreciate that.
Right.
I'm sorry, we're a little short on time, Alan. Let me give Jean Peters-Baker a chance to respond.
You know, it is not hopeless, however. So it may be harder if you're a felon to get a job, but it is not hopeless. And we've seen that through a reentry program that we started in Jackson County and how we have 25 participants in that course. And the majority of them are working. And, you know, they got job ready and they got the job and they're holding down the job. And that is pretty key to their success. But real quickly, I just want to say that we're learning from some of the mistakes of other cities. It's nice not to be the first here. Cincinnati taught us that just creating a jobs program is not the answer, that it has to be multi-layered.
Clean Sweep was last month. Very quickly, Laura, when does the first call-in happen? Anyone know?
April 17th.
April 17th. Sergeant Gary Cooley of the Kansas City Police Department. Also here with Jean Peters-Baker, the Jackson County Prosecutor, Dr. Ken Novak from the UMKC Criminal Justice Department, and Laura McDonald, Executive Director of Moore Squared. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined earlier by Michael Anderson, who shared some of his story as someone who came away from a life of crime. Thanks to all of our guests. You can find out more about them, as well as archives, podcasts, and a lot more at our Central Standard page at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow for the Movie Critics, who will be here on Central Standard Friday. They'll have their take on the Oscars. Stay tuned now for Up to Date, which will have a look back 50 years later on the March on Washington. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Our intern is Claire McInerney. And our announcer is Kim Noble. Our executive producer is Bill Anderson. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard. We'll be right back.